Mr. Bell, Reel 4. Now, I want to look at some of the convoy work you did. And I believe on one convoy, you were detached halfway through from the convoy because of U-boats. Could you tell that story for us?
Yes. And our skipper came on the blower and said that he's going up in the Arctic now to avoid the U-boats, you know. And we headed up towards, and that's the first time I've seen icebergs. And I told you they were blue, not white. They were like blue in colour, and they are, you know. And we'd passed a line of them going up in the Arctic. And then we turned around and came back and resumed our place in the convoy, in the middle of the convoy.
It was just, you didn't take all the escorts, and it was just your escort that went?
No, just us. The Viper and the three escorts, Pathfinder, Opportune, that's it. The three destroyers, that was our escort. So we lifted up then back again and joined the convoy again, you see. We were usually placed in the middle of the convoy for protection, you know.
And there was something about Lord Haw-Haw, Joyce, report. Can you tell us about that?
He said that he came over the radio one night, you know, and he said that tonight we sank the Viper, he said, and there are no survivors, you know. That was a terrible interview, I think, from Germany, you know. This is Germany calling, you know. And he did all this. And my brother had phoned my mother, at least she'd seen my mother, to say that she hadn't heard it. But other people in the village had heard it, you know, and they knew I was on the Viper. You know, news travels fast. And but she didn't seem to know for quite some time, you know. But it would have worried the old lady very much, you know, if that had happened. And when I came home, my sister said, "We're very pleased to see you, of course." No.
Now, how about in the Atlantic? How did you react to the sort of sea conditions, to the bad weather, you know?
Well, the weather could be, at certain times of the year, the weather could be atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. We're on a big carrier, you know, on a biggish 10,000 ton carrier. But it's so bad, really, you know. We coped, you know. There were a lot of crew there, you know, to help you out. And,
was there much of a roll on the ship?
Well, not exorbitant, but it was like a big merchant, you know, so that she cooked very well, really.
And what about seasickness? Did you suffer from that?
Oh, yes, I did suffer occasionally from seasickness, yes. And particularly when we'd been on leave and we came back, I was seasick quite well.
Anyone tell you any cures?
That one about the dry toast, you know, and the old pie, the old cocoa, the Navy cocoa, that was terrible, but that did the trick, you know. It settled me down.
Why was the cocoa terrible?
Well, it had this greasy film on the top, you know, and people used to love us, you know, when the watch was cold at night and they had the middle watch, you know, the crew, all crews loved them, the cocoa, you know. They loved it because it warmed them up, you know, when they're on watch and they have the double coats on. They were on watch, and particularly if they're outside on the guns, you know, things like that, you know. They were warmed up, and it was a great stuff to try.
Now, what about the question of U-boat attacks on the convoy? That's what you were looking out for in your ASDIC, was it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we used to have to concentrate very hard to make sure that they were kept at bay, you know. And of course, the convoy was well protected because all the escorts were fitted with ASDICs, and they were all looking out on their particular sweep as well, you know. But we were independent on the Viper so much as we carried out our own sweep, you know, right round the ship to make sure that nobody got near us, you know.
And do you recall on the Atlantic? I don't know how many Atlantic convoys you did before you went on Torch.
Quite a few.
And are there any particular contacts with U-boats that you recall?
Oh yes, I remember one U-boat that we sank. We weren't credited with it, but we...
What do you remember of it?
We sank at least the destroyers. We didn't sink them, you see. The destroyers, we detected them, but the destroyers used to go and deal with them, you know. I remember one, and it was a very... I thought at one time that I saw the U-boat surface, you know, but it might have been a figment of the imagination, you know. think and play tricks on you. But knowing this U-boat lad that I write to now, he was in the Atlantic as well, you know, and he says, you know, that, of course, he doesn't say that he ever saw us, you know, we never saw each other. He survived the whole war, you know, on a U-boat, man. That was another phase I've come to.
Any other incidents you remember on the Atlantic convoys before we come to the torch?
Well, I remember the sinkings particularly. The U-boats used to sink them, you know, on the edge of the convoy. They used to pick them off, you know. And it was sad to see those ships going down, you know. Particularly old ships that were a bit slow, you know. They got lagged behind a bit on the convoy, and they were picked off by the U-boats. They used to pick them off, you know. That was the feature I remember mostly. But sometimes they picked big ships off as well, you know. And they went for troopers, of course, as well. If they could get a trooper, that was a fellow in the copy of cap, you know. They'd lost a lot of men on troopers, you know. Carried about a thousand or more.
Now, what was the role of the aircraft? I know that's not directly related to you, but what did the aircraft do? You said you carried swordfish?
Four swordfish and six hurricanes, I think it was.
And what was their role, the swordfish?
At first they carried, not hurricanes, they carried fairy fulmers, I think, at first. But they carried, and we had a commander, Agnew, I remember. Commander Agnew was the commander flying. And he organised the flying, you know, in shifts of like all work, you know, and any particular assignment, you know, he had to. And he used to send them off and patrol right round the convoy, you know, the swordfish.
Looking for what? Looking for
U-boats as well. They could see them underneath, you know. They could see them underneath and report them, you know. So that we were protected when you think of it, you know.
Did they carry anything to attack U-boats, or because?
Yes, they carried aerial torpedoes, and they carried bombs as well. They carried bombs as well, and depth charges. Carried depth charges. Limited in supply, of course, but they carried them. And they attacked the U-boats from the air with depth charges.
Were they always able to make safe landing? I mean, would they land back on the deck? Did they always manage it, or was there some tension about
yes,
it?
Yes, they managed it. Actually, it was very hazardous to do that, you know. Taking off, they're only 400 feet long, you know, escort carriers. Only 400 foot long. Ours was. And the Archer as well was the old fashioned black class. You're supposed to go on first, never mind that one. I wouldn't know about it. The Archer was the first of our class, didn't it? The first of the class.
But what about them landing and taking off? What would you see? What was the procedure?
Well, when they took off, they were taking off, and they used to go right to the end of the flight deck, you know, at full speed. And they used to dip as they took off the flight deck, they dipped down towards the ocean like that, you know, we thought, oh, that's what we've done. And then up they would come, you know, like that, just to do. And so I've got a picture of them, as you can see in there in my album, you know, the swordfish taking off. And the old swordfish used to get on, you know, coming on, they used to get onto the flight deck, get above the flight deck like that, and then drop onto the flight deck. And they almost stand still, you know, without a rest of while, of course. But, they very rarely got passing in the arrest awareness because they didn't have a great long run, you know. They come down like a tired old seagull, you know, to get to death, you know. They were very effective, the swordfish.
What about the hurricanes landing? Was that different?
Hurricanes was a bigger problem altogether. They had to land at higher speed, you know. And we practiced a long time, you know, in working with trials, as they call them. We practiced a long time getting hurricanes down on the deck and taking off again, you know. But they were very brilliant, brilliant pilots, those lads. They were very brilliant. With all due respect to the RAF, they were ahead of the RAF, you know. They were brilliant pilots, these lads. Because they had to land on a deck that was pitching sometimes, you know. The ship was pitching and yawing sometimes, and had to land on it. One time we had one went over the side. You know, I remember it going over the side. And I can tell you about that later when we get to North Africa.
That was later, yeah.
Yes, but this lad did actually go over the side one time, though. He got off, he got out all that right, and he was rescued, but his limb was gone. And therefore he was reprimanded about that, yeah.
We'll come to that. What about, as ASDIC operators, you know, were you seen as special, different from the normal ratings, or did you think you stood out?
Yes, we were. For instance, when we came off watch, people would ask us what things were like, you know, how they used to say, how's things pink, you know, how's things down there pink. We'd say, oh, go to sleep, lads, you're okay, you know, even though it wasn't, you know, it's okay, lads, you know, get your head down, you know, and they relied upon you. I think that was a feature of the Navy, everybody around everybody else. You know, your cook was relied upon, you know, for your grill. Your gunners relied upon, you know, and your assets relied upon, your radar ratings relied upon to do their jobs, you know. And I think that was a great camaraderie in the Navy, that everybody had to rely on everybody else.
So you got on with the other sections, including the stokers, because sometimes...
In the end of our mess was some stokers, like, they were very pally. Oh, yes. In fact, the lad that gave me the cocoa was a stoker. He was a stoker. So we got on very well together.
Would you say the Biter was a happy ship?
Oh, yes. Very happy ship.
What made a happy ship, do you think, as opposed to, I don't know whether you were ever on a sad ship or a bad ship. But
well, there was one, yes.
But what made the Biter happy?
I think that the dominant was happy as well. I think that, everyone relied on everybody else to do their job, and everybody was content with their lot, you know, was content with. They knew that we were in danger all the time. When you as soon as you left out of the harbour, I mean, you were in danger until you got back. And sometimes not after that even. But we all accepted it, you know. And we all dug in together, you know. And I think that's what makes happy ship. And I think it comes from the top as well. Like the skipper, you know, was very good and kept us informed of what we were doing and all the rest of it, you know. And the officers were very good. I found the opposite. I liaisoned a lot with Lieutenant Lee, who recommended me for a he was an excellent man. He was an RN lieutenant, and he was very, very good.
Now, what about the Operation Torch, then? What do you recall of that?
Well, eventually we were assigned to the Clyde. And
what, you moved from Belfast to the Clyde?
To the Clyde. And we were kept in the dark as to what we were going to do.
Do you know when you moved to the Clyde? What month or?
Oh, I don't know.
It's okay.
It was prior to Operation Torch. It was ready for that operation in the beginning, see. And, you know, that's when we took on the French, you know. And with French, we had to get the French warships, you know, away from the Germans, you know, because there were some very powerful battleships there, you know, in North Africa. It was to be Oran, Algiers, and Casablanca, if you remember. The Yanks went to Casablanca and we went to Oran and Algiers. We went to Oran, actually. And I remember that operation very, very clearly.
What do you remember of it, then?
Well, we set off for the Gibraltar. We set off for Gibraltar, along with the Pathfinder of the Opportunity Obdurate again, you know. And we set off for there. And we would join some of the fleet units, you know, in the Bay of Biscay and down that area. Do you know, when we met them all, there was a convoy of 500 ships. It was a convoy, I well remember that. And we were right slap bang in the middle of it, you know. Slap bang in the middle of it. 500 ships. Wherever you look like that, you see ships. There were troop transports and all sorts of things, you know, to take down there. And we went and we took those through Gibraltar Strait in one night. In one night, we took them all straight through. Isn't that amazing? I remember that, you know. I think that was a fantastic operation, you know. And we were...
Were you attacked at all?
No. We did it in dead of night, you know, right through the middle. And we had prepared, of course, our passage right through, you know, with such a large convoy. And we got to Oran in the early hours of the morning. I was then, you know, not very experienced sailor, and therefore I was a lookout on the bridge, you know. And I did that lookout period, you know, when I was not ASIC operating. I did the ASIC watches as well, of course. But,
and what do you remember of that day?
I tell you what, I vividly remember. During the operation, you know, the Americans were at Casablanca and we were around Algiers. And our sister ship, the Avenger, it was called, was the escort carrier. That was the first escort carrier. And she was assigned to Algiers. And eventually she was lost.
No, stick to your ship, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Anyway.
What do you remember?
I was on lookout duty on the Beta. And I suddenly saw, during the operation, I suddenly saw these great big guns coming towards light, and I thought, I got to see it. You know, you're speechless when that suddenly goes thrust upon you. The Dunkirk or the Jean Bart or some of those are coming out here, you know, and we're an aircraft carrier here. We're going to be hammered. And I thought, I looked around to report it to the skipper, you see, or the officer of the watch. I looked around to report the officer of the watch. And I was speechless, I just couldn't speak. And
saw the guns from a French battleship training round?
Yes, coming around towards us like that. And you know, it turned out to be the Rodney. The Rodney had come in, especially he decided relief. It was the Rodney, because the officer was saying, oh, that's all right, it's the Rodney, you know, the battleship Rodney. And we thought it was one of the big French ones, you know. But we were inside the harbour by then. We were inside the harbour. We went right inside the harbour. The restricted flying operations, but we did. We went in there.
When we attacked from the air? Cause you
wasn't on that occasion, no.
Okay, carry on then. You entered the harbour.
Yes, that's right. Entered the harbour. And one of our flyers actually ran out of fuel and he landed on the aerodrome in Oran. And the French general came and surrendered to him. He was some lieutenant, this lad. Glasgow Bricklayer. And the French general came along and surrendered to him, you know. And said to him, right, we'll fill you up with petrol and off you go. And he came back on the Beta. He came back and said, he told the story of the skipper. He said, well, I've got the lot to surrender here, you know. And everybody was very happy about it, you know. The French were wishy-washy, that's, you know, they were. And this French general gave it this sub-lieutenant. And so that was wonderful, that.
So you didn't come under fire at that stage?
No. We were really supervising the invasion by troops coming into there, you know. The troops landed there. And there were some Yaqui troops among them, you know. They got shot to pieces. Because everything had to be secretive, you know, you had to be quiet. And the Yanks were, hi, I'm going, you know, friend of the nature, and that sort of thing. And of course, they got hammered. And the British naval commandos took over from them and swept them up. no bother at all. So that was something that we shouldn't talk about, it's so cooperative, you know. But that did happen. But the Yanks were very slipshod, you know, they didn't do it properly. It was supposed to be a secret operation. And it was stealthy, you know, you had to go do it on the quiet. It was a very interesting operation, I thought. And Oran was taken without any bother at all. And I think these battleships eventually came over to us, you know. We didn't use them. We just disarmed them, you know. We just took their bridge box out and that was it. And immobilised them, in other words, you know. The French battleships, we just immobilised them. And that's what we were there to do. Our captain, of course, was a very senior man in the convoys, you know, in the operation. He was very senior. He'd been a foreign captain. He was there. And so it passed off nicely. And
you didn't get ashore, get aboard any of the French ships? You didn't go to sea?
We just came out. Once we'd done the job, we came out and returned home, you see. Passed back to Gibraltar and back to Gibraltar. And then we're back home. And back to convoy duty, back in the Atlantic again on the convoy duties. But that was important, you know, that was our job.
And always on the Atlantic at that time?
Yes.
And what do you remember, anything that happened there? I mean, one thing we've not discussed is times when you were attacked by Stukas when you were near harbour. Can you tell us what that was like?
Well, these Stukas were, they operated in packs of about seven, you know. And they used to attack if they got a destroyer, and of course the destroyers were very slim, but they would go for a carrier, you see. They couldn't hit destroyers, but they'd go for a carrier. And if they got towards a carrier, of course, they lost their power as well, then you lost your air cover. And carriers were a good target. So they used to come and have a big go at you, you know. They weren't very successful. But they used to have an automatic bomb released at Stukas, you know. And of course, when they did their dive, and they reached a certain point, you know, the bomb was released automatically. Not the pilot, the bomb was released automatically. And of course, they could do a lot of damage. So the skipper used to be very, 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 very wary of them, you know. And that's how you got the damn yet, you know. You missed sort of thing, you know. He used to
zigzag the ship about.
That carrier, yes, about. He was very astute at that, you know, he was very astute at that. Because she only had one screw and one rudder, and yet he could maneuver that ship very, very well. Hard of port, yeah, hard of starboard, that was it. You were doing the zigzag. Of course, you couldn't go zigzag through over the Atlantic as well, of course. Not a violent zigzag as we did. A slow zigzag, you know, and that was part of your protection there from U-boats, you know, so they couldn't work out what place you would be at, you know, at a certain time. Because they used to be in front of the convoys sometimes and watch for you coming, you know. And that's why we had to be on our mettle, because if they were in the front of you on the convoy, you know, they'd be waiting to pick you off as they came past, you know, as a ship came past, they'd position themselves to pick you off.
And would you all zigzag together, or would each ship be zigzagging?
The zigzag was worked out. The course was worked out. The course was worked out. And every officer on every ship, the merchantmen as well, had to have the pattern, you know. And the pattern varied, you know. The pattern varied in a convoy. The pattern varied, you know. They used to alter the pattern, you know. So U-boats couldn't work it out, you see. And therefore, we used to zigzag across that one if that way. That added a lot of miles to your journey as well, a lot rather, to your journey. You know, oh yes. Right.
And what about a typical day's routine on a convoy? What? How would your day go on a typical day?
Well, you got up in the morning, or whatever time you had to get up, of course, depending on your watches.
You were in bunks, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't on the bike there, no.
You said you were before.
I slipped up there. I was in hammocks on the bike for a while. Yes, I was in hammocks for a while. Yes, we were in hammocks.
Okay.
And I said, sorry about
it's
that.
It's all right, they can come, yeah. Right.
Yes. Yeah, I got bunks. We weren't on bunks until we got the American built on the Dummett, you know. But there were hammocks on the bike there, yes. All the time. I wasn't on the bike very long, of course, but when you come to think of it, it was hectic, yes, but my paper showed I wasn't on the bike too long, you know.
About a year?
Yes. Well, you got up and you had certain deck duties to do as well, you know.
That's what you mentioned about cleaning ship.
Oh, yes. You posed down, you know, you did difficult things, and you had your brushes to do as well, you know. You had your brushes to do. That was one duty we did. Now then, a cook of the mess, as he was appointed, really, he used to go up and do the rum ration. An officer used to dish out the rum, you know, from a barrel on the deck. And he used to dish out the... And you had a tot of rum a day, you know. And you usually had that with your meal, your dinner, before your dinner meal, or with your dinner meal. And
What did you think? You hadn't drunk much before the Navy. Did you think of the rum ration?
I've just come off temperance, you see, because 20-year-old, you know, until you're 20-year-old, you're not allowed to drink, you see, in the Navy. You're not allowed rum anyway. You're temperance. And I got my first taste of rum there, you know. And
what do you think?
Oh, it was a wonderful. I've drunk rum ever since, really. But rum was I don't drink it often enough, really. But it's a lovely drink, rum, and we used to. And the lads used to look forward to getting Roamers, and especially in cold weather, you know. Roamers are very nice, especially if you're in cold weather in the North Atlantic, you know.
Did people try and save it up to get, or did you have to drink it, or were you supposed to drink it when you got?
You're supposed to drink it. The officer gave you your rum ration for the mess, you see. And the killer of the mess gave it out. That's the leading hand. He gave it out, you see. And you had some people trying to save it up, you know, but you weren't supposed to save it. It was an offence to save it, you know. You had to drink it there and then, you know. And the officer used to stand by you and made sure you did, you know, if you got the chance.
But some still did, but you didn't. You just drank yours.
Oh, I did occasionally, yes. As I got more experienced, I learned how to save it up, you know. In an Eno's fruit bottle, fitted into your pocket, you know, nicely. It was a flat bottle, Eno's fruit salt bottle, and we used to sometimes slide it in, pour it in, and say, and I used to bring it home, of course, and say to my mother, "There's some rum for your Christmas cake," you know. Oh yes, we used to do that.
Now, so after that, what would the rest of the routine, the day's routine? You've got up, you've done your morning duties.
Well, your morning duties finished at dinner time, you see. And then in the afternoon was sometimes what we call the making mend.
What was making mend?
Making mend was a time when you could mend your clothes, you know. It was traditional from the old Navy to making mend was to mend your clothes, you know. If you dripped anything, you had the stitches. And of course, sailors were always handy with a needle, you know. And we had sailmakers in the Navy, you know. We had sailmakers. And they would help you out. And we used to enjoy making men, you know, because sometimes making men was a nice, easy afternoon, you see, when you could do what you liked, you know. But it was called making men. And that was the idea of it, to making men your clothes.
And that was once a week, was it?
No. It was occasionally.
Okay.
Just occasionally.
So what else might you be doing in the typical day?
Well, you could read. Or play cards, or whatever you want to do.
Was there much gambling or crown and anchor?
Oh, yes, gambling, certainly. Yes, a lot of gambling. A lot of card games went on. And cribbage was a great game in the Navy.
And did they gamble on that, or?
Yes, they did. And you had a board, you know, with the holes in, you know. And you made your score with the boards, you know. And you put the matchstick in the hole, you know. And that was a game called crib, they called it.
And did you play?
No, I didn't. I never played cribbage. Never did.
Did you just not gamble?
No, I didn't gamble. I was taught to be a goody-goody at home, you see, and I kept that up, you know. I never
So what would you do? Reading?
Reading was my pastime, typically. And talk to the lads, you know, about various topics, you know. And, of course, you had the radio sometimes, you know, the radio came from home. And you could talk about what was going on at home, you see. You know, the bombings and things like that affected people, you know, affected naval readies because they were away from home and they didn't know what was going on, you know. And they talked about that quite a lot, you know, about what was going on at home.